Okay, we are a couple of minutes late because of some technical difficulties. Sorry about that. Today we will continue our discussion about quantitative research. So quantitative research is research done with numbers. And the questions that we need to answer when we do quantitative research is what do we want to say with the numbers? So do we want to explain something, or do we want to predict something, or do we want to describe something? So for example, we could use the mean score in the exam to describe whether the exam is too difficult for the students, or alternatively, whether the students have not studied enough for the exam. If we know a correlation or an association between two variables, then we can know we can use that relationship to predict or to explain. For example, if we see that men are taller than women on average, then we can explain that maybe the difference in height between those two groups is because of the gender. Also, we can predict that if we see a man, then that man is going to be on average slightly taller. So if we measure a man, then we know that the measurement is likely going to be higher than if we measure a woman. So that's our prediction. So we want to first understand what we want to say with the numbers, and we can describe, we can try to explain, or we can try to predict. These are three different tasks, and you need to be clear about what is the focal task. Then the second question is where the numbers come from, and that relates to our research design. So we have four different prototypical research designs in the material. We have the experiment, in which case we manipulate a variable. For example, we could have a variable that receives value 1 or 0, depending on whether a person is given a medication or a placebo in a medical trial. And then we observe the outcome. So that's an experimental study. Then we could get surveys, do surveys where we ask people to provide us numbers. So we ask you to rate how you like the food at the cafeteria today from 1 to 5 or 1 to 7 or whatever scale. We can also ask you to indicate your age or indicate your income or any other numerical information. We ask numbers from people, that's surveys. Then we had the field study where we observe people and then we record those observations as numerical data. So, for example, we could calculate the number of people here and then calculate the number of people from different classes and then try to use that number of people to, for example, explain class popularity or average grade in the exam. Then we had archival data or secondary data analysis, in which case we take data that has been collected for some other purpose, like log files or statistics about companies, and then we use those in our analysis. Then the third question is, what do we do with the numbers? And today we're going to be focusing on the third question, and that's basically about analysis techniques. So let's assume that we already know what we want to say, we have the data, then the final question is, so what do we do with the data? The overall big picture in these four lectures is that in the first lecture we discuss research design, what does it mean to make a claim about causality, what's the difference between prediction and explanation, and then we covered the four main research designs. On the second lecture we looked at measurements, so where do we get the data and how do we claim reliability and validity of the data. Today we're going to be looking at regression analysis, which is the main tool for eliminating alternative explanations for our data. So a regression analysis in a nutshell takes one dependent variable that we try to explain with multiple different independent variables and answers the question, which one of these independent variables really matters. I'll go through your examples soon. Then on next Monday, we will take this all together and I will demonstrate you a data analysis project. So I'll give you a hypothesis and then I'll explain you how I went about testing that hypothesis, including how I collected the data, how I analyzed the data, and then how do I interpret the numbers and how do I report it as a result. So that's the overall plan for these four lectures. We discussed reliability and validity last time, focusing mostly on measurement. So what does it mean if our measures are reliable? Or if our measurement instrument is reliable? So the idea of measurement was assigning numbers to some quantities of interest. If we repeat the measurement, we get the same or similar results. So if we have a bathroom scale and the scale always shows the same number when we step on it, then it's reliable. If there's a bathroom scale, it shows me 74 kilos. I step off, I step back on, it shows me 72 kilos. Then that's unreliable. So it does. There's random noise in the result. So what's our measurement validity? So validity refers to whether the measurement instrument measures what it is supposed to measure. So for example, if we have a bathroom scale and we step on it, we expect that it measures our weight instead of, for example, our age or our gender or some other characteristic. So does the instrument measure what it is supposed to measure? With physical measurement, like measurement tape and scale, it's fairly easy to see that they are valid. But if we have, for example, a question whether you like the food in the cafeteria from 1 to 5, 1 is completely disagree, 5 is completely agree, whether that's a valid measure of whether the food was good in the cafeteria, that's a more difficult question to answer. Then we have statistical conclusion validity, which refers to are we using our statistics correctly when we claim something about the sample, the smaller set of units, does it really generalized to the population, the larger set of units that we're interested in. And then we have external validity, which is about whether the results generalize to other settings. So last time we discussed reliability and validity, and reliability is precision. So do we always get the same results? So this is highly reliable, but it's not valid because the hits here are not on the target. And then validity is whether these hits are on the target. So this is our valid because the hits are correct on average, so they're on the bullseye on average, but they're spread out. So when the shooter shoots, he or she will not get the same point all the time, so it's unreliable. Then reliability can be increased by taking multiple measures and taking the average. So here, the average would be here right on the bullseye of these five shots here. With validity problems, there is really not much that you can do about them. And then also validity, it's very difficult to identify if you have a validity problem. So if we have a scale, bathroom scale, and we are a person with unknown weight steps on the scale, we can easily observe whether the scale provides you the same reading when you measure the same person over and over. But if you have no reference point, then you can't say whether the scale measures the weight correctly or not. So if I step on a scale that shows 60 kilos, 61 kilos, 62 kilos, then you know that it's not a very reliable scale. But you don't know whether it's a valid scale or not unless you have some other way of measuring my weight. So validity is more difficult than reliability. Validity is also more challenging or more important because quite often when we have a reliability problem, we can deal with it by taking repeated measurements. If we have a validity problem, we can't really do much about it except to come up with a better way of measuring the quantity of interest. And this relates to why we so often have multiple questions in a survey form. So the idea of having multiple questions is that they are like repeated measures of the same thing. So when we asked people whether the food was great, whether they were satisfied with their meal today, did they enjoy the lunch today? Those are three questions that basically are measured. Did you like what you ate today? And then if they correlate highly, then we conclude that they could be reliable. If they don't correlate highly, then we conclude that maybe there's a reliability problem. This is the reason why we see in the Venkatesh paper that they have three indicators in this case for each of their the constructs or concepts that they want to measure. And the typical approach that is also done in this paper is that when we take multiple measures that are supposed to measure the same thing, then we take the average of those measures, and that's our final score that we'll use in the analysis after that. Then for measurement validation and reliability assessment, we have two main tools in our use. The first tool is called a factor analysis, and the idea of factor analysis is that it takes a larger number of variables. So, for example, if you do a survey that has 30 questions, then all those 30 questions go into the factor analysis. And factor analysis tells you what those indicators, individual questions, have in common. So here, paper says that they use factor analysis, and then they also tell that they use Cronbach's alpha, which is a statistic that quantifies reliability. Typically, we think that 0.7 is okay reliability level. Anything more than that, that's great. Anything less than that could be problematic. Then what factor analysis, I mentioned, that does is that it takes a larger number of variables, then it answers the question, do these variables actually reflect a smaller number of unobserved things that we call factors? And the analysis tells you in this case that the first three variables here, the first three questions, clearly belong together. So they have something in common, and the fact that these factor loadings are small tells that these other indicators are distinct from these three indicators here. And allows us to conclude that these indicators could be valid measures of one of the same thing, and that these other indicators are discriminant valid because they don't measure the same thing that these three indicators. So in an ideal, when you see a factor analysis result, ideally each indicator would be assigned to just one factor, like here is the case. There's always one number that is large, other numbers are small, and then also how the indicators are assigned to the factors by the analysis corresponds to how you think they should work as measures of the concepts that you're studying. So the factor analysis and Cronbach's alpha are tools for assessing validity and reliability. Then we also discussed a bit about deductive reasoning. So the idea of deductive reasoning is that we start with a theory. So we have a theory explanation of what happens, how, when, and why. So this theory here is about how information, quality characteristics, accuracy, and other attributes influence people's decisions to use government information systems. Then they explain, so they provide an explanation of why they think that information accuracy is positively associated with intention to use e-government or government-provided electronic services. Then we have a hypothesis after the theory. So the theory is a written explanation of what we think is true. Then a hypothesis is something that we should observe in our data if the theory is correct. So the idea is that if the theory is correct, then the hypothesis should be observed. And this kind of inference is called deduction. So if theory is correct, then inevitably we would see that the hypothesis would also be supported. Then if the theory is not correct, if the hypothesis is not supported by the analysis, then we conclude that maybe the theory is not right. Another way of viewing this is that we have these theoretical concepts, information accuracy, intention to use. We make a causal claim, a theoretical claim, that there are information accuracy leads to intention to use. Then we have survey questions about empirical about information accuracy and survey questions about intention to use. Then we make a hypothesis that these two sets of survey questions should be correlated if there really is a causal relationship between information accuracy and intention to use. Then we collect some specific data, and if we don't find a correlation in the data, in the survey responses, then we conclude that this original proposition probably was not correct. So that's the idea is that we start with theory, then we think that, okay, if this theory is correct, what should we observe? So if our theory is that women or girls study more than boys or men in this class, what kind of observable consequence should we have for that hypothesis? So if it's true that girls study more than boys, then we should observe that the girls do better in exam. If there's no difference between girls and boys' exam performance, we infer that our initial claim that girls study more than boys is not a plausible claim, because there's strong evidence from prior literature that the more you study, the better you do. Of course, it's not a bulletproof inference, but once we repeat these studies over and over, then we will be correct on average in this kind of inferences. Let's start going now to some new stuff. So this is in a nutshell what we did before. So any questions about reliability, validity, measurement, and these things that we have discussed this far? You can also use the course forum for questions if you want to. So the Venkatesh paper has this figure one. And what does the figure tell us? What does the figure or the model represent here? So let's focus on this part. So what do these boxes and this arrow represent? Well, the figure presents a set of claims or a theory. So what's this claim here? Two boxes, arrows leading from one box to another.
That the intention to use e-government increases the use of e-government.
Yeah. So if a person is intends to use e-government, then they will also use it. So it's the arrow here in this kind of diagram typically indicates a causal relationship. So this is these kind of diagrams are quite commonly used for summarizing the theory. So it's kind of like a graphic explanation of what their theory is about. So the theory in this paper is that information quality and uncertainty reduction and then some channel characteristics all influence intention to use e-government. And then that intention influences whether the person actually uses the e-government services. And the person's actually using the e-government influences whether they think that e-government services are good or not. So the idea is that we can use these characteristics here to influence intention, and then intention influences the use of e-government. Stated other way, this figure claims that the only way we can make people use more e-government services is to first influence their intentions. So that's it's pretty obvious that if you want to influence a person's behavior, then you should try to focus on their intentions, whether they intend to do something. If they intend to do something, then they're more likely to do it than otherwise. What does this table tell us? Any ideas what the table is about? Well, if you have no idea what the numbers mean, can you tell me what the title of the table means? This is table 2 if you have the paper open on your computer. So what does the title of the table say? It says it's hierarchical regression analysis predicting intention to use e-government. So that tells us three important things. This is an analysis about the use of e-government. So we are trying to predict, or instead these guys are trying to explain why some people are more likely to use e-government than others. And then it also tells that their main analysis tool is regression analysis. Beyond that, unless you understand what regression analysis does, it's very difficult to say what this table actually, what the numbers mean. So let's go to regression analysis then. So these kind of tables are very common. If you see an information systems research article that applies quantitative techniques, I would say that at least 3 out of 4 papers will have a table like this. So we have columns here, and then we have some numbers here. We have some variables here. We have some indices here. We have a footer, and then we have a title. So what does all this tell us? And that's the focus of today's lecture. Regression analysis is a tool that helps us to make causal claims. So when we want to make causal claims, then we need to have these 3 conditions. We have to show association, so there is some kind of statistical dependency between the cause and the effect in the data, or the variables that represent the cause and the effect. And then we must claim the direction of influence. So if we say that girls study more and that leads to higher performance in exam, we have to claim that it's actually that way instead of the other way, that higher exam scores leads to more studying, leads you to being girl. Obviously, exam score can lead to more studying because you study before the exam and gender is set at birth, so we can vary that either. In other cases, the direction of influence is more difficult to establish. The typical way is to measure the cause before the effect. And then we have the elimination of rival explanation, and that is where regression analysis comes to a hand. So regression analysis is a tool that allows us to do the third step, or at least part of the third step, with a good research design. Before we go into the regression analysis, let's talk about correlation first, because regression analysis is related to correlation. So what is correlation? What does correlation tell us? If I say that a person's height and person's gender are correlated, what does it mean? Yeah, you could say that that's one way, but everybody has a gender, so gender always occurs. So you can't really define it that way. So you are on the right track. So if we say that the degree of studying, how many hours you study and your exam grade are correlated, what does it mean? Yeah, so that's something that correlation tells us. And that's not the definition for the correlation, but yeah. So if we see that some people study more than others, then we can also expect that they perform better in the exam than others. And correlation is a measure of that kind of statistical association. Importantly, for some kind of studies, correlation is a measure of linear association. So the idea of a correlation, it's the most commonly used measure of association of two things. So it's linear and it's about two things. So here, the first variable, first row shows two variables. So one is the x-axis, one is the y-axis. And when x and y are completely, if we know x, we will always know y, then the correlation is 1. So the value of x completely determines the value of y. 0.8, it's pretty clear that there's a dependency. 0.4, there's dependency, but it starts to kind of like break apart. And then 0 correlation, there is no linear dependency between two variables. Correlation, importantly, doesn't depend on the magnitude of the relationship. It just tells that these two variables vary together. So it doesn't really tell us anything about the direction of a line if we draw a line through the data. It just tells that all the observations are on a line. It doesn't tell us about the direction. It tells that the line is not flat, but otherwise it doesn't tell us much. Then if the correlation is negative, then it means that when one variable goes up, then another variable goes down. For example, the number of beers that you drink before the exam probably correlates negatively with the exam score. So when number of beers go up, then exam score goes down. Then we have also statistical association. So there's a clear dependency between here between X and Y, but it is nonlinear. So these are not correlated. So no correlation doesn't mean that there is no association between two things. It just means that there is no linear association. So these are strong relationships, but they are not correlational. Okay, so if we want to say that, let's say, women as a CEO causes companies to be more profitable, then we should observe an association. We observe that companies' profitability correlates with CEO gender. So what's the problem with using a correlation? Can we make a claim that naming a woman as a CEO causes a company to be more profitable simply by observing a correlation between CEO gender and profitability?
Correlation doesn't imply causality.
It doesn't imply causality, and why? So why can't we make a claim? If I say that,
there could be,
for example,
The size of the company.
So a skeptic to our claim that CEO gender causes profitability differences would say that smaller companies are more profitable, smaller companies are more likely to have women CEOs, therefore correlation. It doesn't imply causality. So what do we do about that? We need to take these third variables into account. So when we make a claim that two variables are causally related, we need to take we call them control variables into account. And correlation doesn't allow us to do that. So correlation is only about two things. There are regression analysis, on the other hand, you can think of it as an extension of a correlation to a case where you have more than two variables. So a regression analysis always says that there is one variable that is dependent, for example, company performance or user satisfaction or what is the thing that you want to explain. That's the dependent variable, explanatory variable, and explained variable, and so on. Then we have one or more independent variables. So the idea of an independent variable is that's the variable that you want to use to explain the dependent variable. So we can ask the question, for example, if we have CEO gender, we have company size, and we have a variable that indicates whether the company is in manufacturing or in services. And then we want to use those variables to explain performance. Then regression analysis will tell us which of these three variables actually matters. So the idea is that the regression analysis says that the dependent variable here is a linear function of all the independent variables, and regression analysis will estimate these regression coefficients for us, and the higher the coefficient, then you can interpret it as being more important. There are some caveats to that. Another way of looking at regression analysis is the Venn diagram presentation. So here we have CEO gender here, X, that's the explanatory variable. Then we have Y, the performance. Y is usually used in regression analysis for the variable that we want to explain, the dependent variable. And this circle here represents the total variation of gender in our data. And this circle here presents the total variation of company's performance or profitability in our data. And the degree to which these overlap is correlation. If Y and X overlap completely, then if we know the value of X, we know the value of Y too, and then the variables are perfectly correlated. If they don't overlap at all, then they're uncorrelated. So the correlation here is basically how large share of this overlap is compared to the total share. Now, if we want to take a third variable into account, let's say company size, then we do a regression analysis. And what the regression analysis does, it gives us what is the unique part of X and Y's overlap when we consider X, the company size here. So it basically, regression analysis takes away the part that company size differences explain. And it answers the question that if you have two companies that are exactly the same size, then how much more profitable the women-led company is expected to be compared to the men-led companies. So regression analysis kind of makes our comparisons more comparable. So it makes the cases more equal by eliminating the influence of all these rival explanations. We can, of course, use other variables beyond company size. So, for example, we could take our industry of a company, and then it would take another small bite away. And when we control for all other relevant factors, then what remains of this overlap is then a pretty robust estimate of causal effect of X on Y, if all the possible relevant alternate explanations have been controlled for. So the key idea of using regression analysis is that it allows us to assess competing explanations for the data. So we have the explanation that CEO tender causes profitability differences. We have alternate explanation that it's actually size differences. We have alternate explanation that it's industry differences. So regression analysis allows us to control statistically where we can't do experiments. So it's kind of like doing our experiments, but in an observational setting. So the idea was that we try to think hard what are the biggest, most plausible alternate explanations for a correlation. Then we collect data for those alternate explanations. Those data go as control variables into our statistical model, and then we estimate it. My favorite book on regression analysis is Woolridge's book. That's not the best book for you because it's a bit technical, but Woolridge starts introducing regression analysis by stating that the power of regression analysis, he uses the multiple regression analysis, which basically means that we have multiple independent variables, is that it allows us to do kind of like experiments without really doing an experiment. This works really well under certain assumptions that I'll go through in a short while. So regression analysis gives you some numbers. And after you have run the regression analysis, then the question is, what do these numbers that you get mean? So if we say that the difference between men and women-led companies in return on assets is 4.7, then but that's pretty obvious how we interpret it. That means that on average, the women-led companies are 4.7 percentage points more profitable than the men-led companies. In regression analysis, we get some numbers as well. So the numbers are betas called regression coefficients. And here, the regression coefficient of CEO is female is beta 1. And we interpret the beta 1 that all other things being equal. So for companies that are in the same size, we use the revenue as measure of size, and that are both either manufacturing firms or service firms, the difference between man and woman-led companies is beta 1. So for example, regression analysis gives us estimate of 0.04 for beta 1, then we would conclude that if industries are kept constant, industry differences are eliminated, size differences are eliminated, there is still 4 percentage points difference between men and women at companies. Of course, this is a valid causal claim only if industry and company size were the only things that matter. So the strength of your claim based on regression analysis depends on how well you have identified any plausible rival explanations. Regression analysis just tells you that if these things are the only things that matter, CEO gender, company size, and industry, then the effect of CEO gender is, for example, 4%. Then we can also make it a causal interpretation. If we have two companies that are the same size, same industry, then a woman-led company is on average be one more profitable. There are The table now in Venkatesh that I showed you before, this table here, we're going to start unpacking what the table means now. So the idea is that they have three columns. Each column in the table represents one regression analysis. So they chose to do present three regression analyses in this part of the paper. They probably did quite a lot more, but they chose that these three are the most important ones for our claim. Then, so this is three regression models. Let's just focus on the first model now. So these are standardized regression coefficients. The advantage of standardized regression coefficients is that it can, in some cases, simplify the interpretation because the regression analysis results are interpreted similarly to a correlation. So one is a very, very strong relationship. Zero is no relationship at all. And for example, there are one standard deviation increase in internet self-efficacy here increases 0.33 standard deviations of the e-government services. So we can just do a rough interpretation that the correlation between internet self-efficacy is correlated at 0.23 with the intention to use e-government services when we hold gender, age, education, and income at the same level. Does it make sense that there are the effect of internet self-efficacy, whatever that means, we just have to read the label and think what it could mean, is positively associated with the use of with the intention to use e-government services? Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So the better you are with using computers, the more likely you are going to be using computer-based services. It's like the same thing. The more confident you're driving a car, the more likely you are going to be driving a car the next time when you have to go somewhere instead of taking the bus, if you have a car. And importantly, this is the internal self-efficacy here is probably it's less than what the correlation. So the regression coefficient in this case is less than what the correlation would be, because age negatively predicts the intention to use e-government services. Age is also negatively correlated with the internal self-efficacy. So age would provide an alternative explanation. Here we have an effect of internal self-efficacy for two people of the same age, two people of the same gender. So this, we have eliminated these influences of all the other variables. So this is effect of internet self-efficacy after controlling for income and other things. Then the stars here are also something that you fairly commonly see. The stars are results of a null hypothesis significance test, or they indicate statistical significance. So the idea of these stars is that what would be the probability of getting this kind of effect or more extreme if there was no effect at all. And three stars indicate one less than 1 in 1,000. So we're pretty confident that if there is less than 1 in 1,000 chance of getting this kind of result, if there was nothing going on between internal self-efficacy and the intensity of e-government services, if it's such a rare occurrence to get this kind of result by chance only, then we conclude that probably there is an effect in the population. So we say that no, it's not plausible to get this kind of effect by chance only. Then we interpret these regression results in two different ways. The first thing is that we look at the p-values. So if the p-values are high, meaning there are no stars, then the effect is so small that it could have occurred by chance only. So let's say that the gender effect here is 0.001. It's statistically non-significant. Because it's non-significant, then we don't need to look at it any further. Gender doesn't matter. That's the conclusion. So men and women controlling for income and education and other things, your gender doesn't really matter whether you want to use e-government services or not. When we have a statistically significant effect of 0.23. The next question is it a large effect? And that's more difficult to judge. You can kind of look at it as a correlation because these are standardized. And if 0.04 correlation I showed you before, that's something that you can see with a plain eye, then and zero is no relationship at all, then maybe 0.23 is something that you could barely see with a plain eye if you plot it today. One, in a master thesis context, what you can do when you use these standardized coefficients is simply compare. So you can say that the effect of internal self-efficacy is a lot stronger than the effect of education. In this sample, it's twice as strong because the effect of education is 1, and this 0.1 and this 0.23. So you can compare them directly. There are some limitations to the extent that you can do that, but during this course, you don't need to worry about those. Okay, so you look at these numbers, and you look at the direction of the effect, you look at the significances, and then if you have standardized estimates, which we normally have in information systems, then you compare the magnitude. So which one is the most important? Then we have three models. So this first model is control variables only, and then the second variable contains information quality characteristics, channel characteristics, and means of uncertainty reduction that were the variables of interest. And the idea here is that you first have a model where you only have those control variables that represent the alternate explanations that you don't really care about, but those are the ones that you want to control for. Then you have the model with the controls and the important variables. And then you compare the models. The model comparisons we do using the R-square statistic. They are always shown in the bottom of the regression table. R-square and adjusted R-square is basically the same thing calculated slightly differently. And the R-square value is the single most important if you just have to take one statistic from a regression analysis. And the R-square tells you how much of the variation of the dependent variable these independent variables explain together. So if we take a look at the Venn diagram presentation again, and here the area A and C here is the correlation between gender and performance. A here is the regression coefficient of gender performance on gender. So this is regression coefficient. And then R square is the degree of total overlap between gender and size. So it's the A, C, and B. That's like how much in total all these variables together explain the dependent variable. And typically in social sciences, when we study people, then the R-square varies between a few percent, 0.03, or up to 30%, 0.3. If you have more than 30%, if you can explain variation in human behavior to more than 30%, then your study is pretty exceptional because people are very difficult to predict what they do. So what do we do in this analysis now is, what do we do with the R-score? We can see that the first model is 10%. So the control variables explain 10%, and then the second variable where we add the interesting variables, the second model is 33%. So what do? We compare. So we compare. We first have the model with the controls only, and then we say the control variables that present plausible alternate explanations for the dependent variable, which is the use of e-governments, only explain 10% of the variation of the use of e-government. When we add our interesting variables, we explain a third of the dependent variables variation. Well, the important variables explain the data a lot better than the controls only. And we interpret that as evidence that the important variables actually matter a lot more than the controls. So here they have the difference in R-square between the control variables model only and the interesting variables model is 23%. That's if we normally explain between 0 and about 30% of human behavior's variation, then if you can explain 23%, that's a pretty strong model. So that's how you look at these regression results. So the questions are, when you look at the regression analysis, is do the variables together explain the dependent variable at all? Then that's what the R square tells us. If the R square is zero, then we don't need to look at any of the other numbers, because if the variables together can't explain the dependent variable, then we know that they can't do that individually either. If R square is a few percent or 10, 20, 30%, then we start to look at the actual regression coefficients. We first look which ones are significant, and we only interpret those that are statistically significant, because the others are so small that we can't rule out chance as an explanation for those associations. Then we look at the signs. So are the signs expected? So if there are the intention to use e-government and internal self-efficacy is positive associated with the intention to use e-government, does it make sense? And then if we want to go a step further, we interpret the magnitudes of the effects. All right. So regression analysis is a very useful tool. It makes certain assumptions, and if you want to use a regression analysis in your own master's thesis, which you most likely do if you do a quantitative study, then you need to be aware of these assumptions under which it works. So the regression analysis assumes or takes one dependent variable and one or more independent variables. Importantly, if you have just one independent variable in your regression analysis, so you explain one variable with another, then a regression analysis is basically the same as correlation. So calculating a correlation between two variables and then calculating a regression analysis in the same two variables doesn't really make any sense, because it tells you the same story. Regression analysis is useful when you have more than one explanatory independent variables. The regression analysis also fits a linear model. So we say that this is the y, the dependent variable, this is the x, the independent variable. We are saying that in a regression analysis that the y increases linearly with x. Then we also assume that the actual observations, the actual values that we observe, are roughly equally spread around the regression line, so that most observations are clustered closely under the regression line and only few are far. And then also the variance of this, how much these observations are distributed on the regression line, shouldn't depend on which part of the line we look at. Here's an example. So this is a variable called prestige, variable called education. So what those tell is not important, but we can see that when we draw a regression line through the data, the observations are roughly equally spread out around the regression line. How the computer works and how it estimates the model is that the computer's task is to find the line. So the computer answers the question that if we have a line that explains the data the best, where should the line go? And we could tell a person to draw the line in the middle. And that's a good strategy for drawing the line. But computer doesn't understand what drawing in the middle means. We have to specify what it means that we draw the line through the data so that it goes through the middle of the data. The computer, when it calculates this, it calculates the regression line and it calculates residuals for each observation. So the idea of a residual is that it's where the line goes, so you compare this observation here. So education is at 12 years and prestige is at about 30. And then the line would indicate that prestige should be at 55. The residual is the difference between the values here, or the line the model predicts, and the actual observed value. Then the computer sets the line by calculating all these residuals, then raising them to the second power, taking a sum, and then finding the line so that the sum is as small as possible. And this is called the least squares estimation principle. The reason why I'm bringing the estimation principle up is not that you should know what it is, but you should understand the concept of the residual. And the residual is important because regression analysis diagnostics, so what you do after your regression model, rely on residuals. So the residual for an observation tells that the model doesn't really explain that observation well. So if one of the observations is has a very large residual, then we know that it's far from the regression line. Then that could indicate that the line is not drawn properly or that observation is somehow funny. For example, perhaps somebody told us that they are 300 years old, and if we correlate age with income, then that observation would stand up. The residuals are also used when you do this yourself. They are used for doing diagnostics. So the regression analysis makes assumptions. First of all, it makes assumptions that all relationships are linear. For example, people's education and their expected salary is nonlinear. So each additional year of education doesn't increase your salary by a constant amount. Instead, it increases your salary compared to the current level. So each additional year of education after you have completed your mandatory education increases your expected salary by 10%. So it's a relative increase. Then we would need to use another kind of model. Then regression analysis also assumes that all the observations are a random sample. They're independent. So if you take samples of teams, then just take one member from each team and then do analysis with that. And the other important variables are the assumptions are number four says that any other cause of the dependent variable is unrelated to everything that we include in the model. So basically, if we say that our model says that the company's profitability is determined by CEO gender, company size, and company industry, then we make the assumption that anything else that influences company's performance must be uncorrelated with all these three variables. That's often not a realistic assumption, and that's the reason why we need to include lots of controls, because we have variables that could influence the dependent variable and also be correlated with the explanatory variable of interest. If you want to apply regression analysis, then you do these assumptions. You diagnose them by using plotting. And I have this as video material for you, so you can check that if you plan to use them yourself. But let's look at the uses of regression analysis. So I didn't go through the diagnostics in detail, because I have that as video, and I want to talk about other things as well. Any questions about regression analysis, the basic principle?
Yeah, well, maybe I missed it, but like in the three blocks you showed, the first one there was 23 on the Intel Celsius, but the second one was 0.00.
Yeah. That came up on the previous lecture, and I figured it out. I forgot what the reason is. I'll write about that to the course forum.
The idea basically here is that the internet self-efficacy here has an effect when we don't control for these other factors. But I'll check the
paper, and I forgot what the explanation was. But it had a reasonable explanation. I've written it to the course forum later today.
Okay, so it's not a function of the regression analysis against the variables out there, but they're all still there.
They are still there, but they just don't explain as much. So for example, if we regress performance on CEO gender, the effect is 4.7 percentage points, because that's the difference between men and women at companies. If we include other variables that take into account size differences and industry differences, then it's expected that the effect of C on gender will go down, because those provide alternate explanations. Yeah. I'll write to the course form later today or tomorrow morning, depending on when I have the time, and I'll explain this issue in detail.
But that was a really good question. So, any other questions about regression analysis? It allows us to assess competing explanations. That's the reason why we use it. Let's talk about moderation and mediation. This is something that the concept of moderation our materials don't explain really well, and we have asked this in the exam. So this is something that's very commonly used in IS research and something that's also fairly interesting for many of you who want to do regression analysis yourself. So what does that model represent?
So we have y. That's the dependent variable.
We have
x. That's the independent variable. And then this line here indicates a causal relationship that we estimate with regression analysis. So what do you think this m here represents? Exactly. So we call this a moderator variable. So the idea is that X influences Y. For example, how much you exercise influences your muscle mass gain. So if you lift a lot of weights every other day, then you will gain muscle mass. If you eat a lot, then that makes that relationship stronger. But simply by eating a lot more without exercising doesn't make you stronger. So it's kind of like two variables work together and their effect is more than the sum of the individual effects. The same thing if you study a lot and then you make notes during study, the effects of that studying could be stronger for your performance in your exam if you study the same amount without taking notes. So these kind of models are interesting because they allow us to assess under which conditions something happens. So under which conditions is weight training the most efficient for gaining muscle mass? Under which condition is 1 hour of additional studying that has the strongest impact on your exam grade? That kind of things. And moderation is the concept of three variables. Moderator is the variable that acts as the third variable that influences the strength of the relationship. These are very common, and in the Venkates paper, they have these hypotheses about moderation as well. They also use the term moderates here, and in graphical diagrams, we show that there is a relationship from channel characteristics, for example, and then intensity use e-government. And then there is this line that goes to the other line. So we say that this line depends on some other value. Let's then explain how we estimate this kind of models using regression analysis. So the only analysis that this paper does is regression analysis. They do factor analysis, they do Cronbach's alpha for measurement validity and reliability assessment, and then the remaining of the paper is simply application of regression analysis. So they do this kind of model by looking at that kind of regression equation. So they have transparency as moderator and completeness.
So completeness of information influences intention to use, and the more transparent the organization is, the stronger the effect. So that's the idea. So the normal regression model or the interaction model looks like that. So you, in the regression analysis, when you study moderation, you have the dependent variable is there as always. So we have the intention here. And then we have the explanatory variable, completeness. We have the moderate and transparency, and we multiply them together to get their interaction effect, or how much these variables affect when also the other one is present. And the logic behind why we multiply things together becomes apparent when we reorganize the equation a bit. So the idea is that we say that the
effect of completeness here depends on the value of transparency.
So just
reorganizing, we can see that completeness here influences intention to use, but the strength of that effect depends on transparency.
Also, we need to include
the effect of transparency to the dependent
variable in a regression analysis for reasons that are not relevant for you. But typically, those relationships are not drawn in the diagram because we just focus on those relationships that our theory is about. And here the theory was
that completeness influences intention to use, and then that's moderated.
Then, okay, so how do you you estimate this model? Well, we can look at the table one again, and
we have the interaction terms. So these are, they multiply things together, and then you can again compare models. So the models where we allow the effects of accuracy, completeness, convenience, and personalization vary between transparency and trust explains the data 7% better than the model with only the linear effects.
And that would be interpreted as evidence that,
yes, accuracy, convenience, personalization, and accuracy, convenience, and personalization matter,
but their strength varies between individuals
depending on transparency and trust
of that values for those people.
Okay.
So that's the regression model. So how do you then interpret these effects? So
in normal regression analysis, interpretation is that the one unit increase of completeness increases e-government intention to use by 0.11. So how do you interpret this 0.09?
The problem is that we cannot interpret the effect anymore here because we are saying in the model that the effect varies between people. So we can't say that the effect is 0.11. Rather, it's on average 0.09, and then it varies between people. What we do here is that quite commonly is that
we do what this paper says.
They cite a book by Eichen and West, and then they explain that Eichen and West tells that we need to plot data. So in practice, we choose
a low value of moderator, and
we choose a high value of the moderator, and then we calculate
what would be this effect for high value of transparency, and what would be the effect for
a low value of transparency. The high and low are typically chosen that we have plus one standard deviation about the mean, minus one standard deviation about the mean.
So we can see that for people with high transparency, the effect is 0.26.
For people with low transparency,
the effect of completeness is minus 0.08.
So it's positive for people with high trust,
and it's high transparency, and negative for people with low transparency. But this probably is
not as statistically significant. Then we visualize the result
by drawing it as
lines. So all things being equal,
this is how the effect of completeness of information relates to intention for low and high transparency cases.
And then we plot lines.
Then we interpret this figure. So for people with this high transparency strategy, they have on low completeness, their intention to use is less,
but once
intention to completeness increases, the effect for these guys is a lot higher.
So the implication is that, yes, you can increase the intention to use e-government
by increasing completeness of information,
but it only works for these
high transparency people
or high transparency scenarios. So summary of moderation. These moderation models are used for assessing contextual effects. So how does the strength of one effect vary between different contexts. And how we do in a regression framework is that we first estimate the model without the mediator variable, the moderator variable. So, or we have simply the moderator itself and the variable that represents the effect that is being moderated. So we have only those variables, two variables, X and M, and controls, of course. Then we do a second model where we multiply X and M together and we use that as an explanatory variable.
Then we compare the R square between model
1 and model 2. So the model with the direct effects, the main effects only, and the model that adds the interaction. So we compare. That was done between model 2 and model 3 in the Venkates paper. The comparison was that the model with interactions produced 0.07 higher R-squared, which is pretty okay for social sciences paper.
Then we
typically plot the result. So the plot was
this.
Then we interpret it from the plot because we cannot look at the effects of one variable in isolation of another one.
And these kind of models
are very, very common. So quite often when we have a very strong theory in IS, then a good strategy for making a publication is to test whether the theory explains the dependent variable better or worse in different conditions. So once we have a good theory that's plausible and that has some initial evidence behind it, then we start to ask the question, so, okay, in which scenarios, in which conditions does this theory actually explain behavior of people? And then to do that, we do this moderation analysis. Any questions about moderation? If you want to do this yourself, then I have some materials on the course website for how to do the plots. And
David Kenny's website is a good starting point. Jeremy Dawson has written
an article, and that article contains an appendix, an Excel sheet for doing the plot that I showed you. So he explains how to do it yourself. And it's a fairly understandable article. If you want to do it yourself, these are good resources. Also, the course website. Let's take a look at mediation then. So moderation and mediation are two terms that are commonly confused, partially because both start with M, and also because both are about a third variable influences a relationship between the main dependent variable and the main independent variable. So mediation model looks like that. So why would that kind of model be interesting? So X is, let's say, studying, and Y is doing well in exam. We regress Y on X, we find a positive regression coefficient after controlling for students' year, class, and gender, and attitude towards school, and whatever. Then we add M. So what does M represent here? Why would this kind of models be interesting? Singleton Straits uses the term intervening variable for a mediator variable. So M stands for mediator. So why would our studying intervening variables be useful?
Here's an example from the book. So we have intervening variable.
What does that mean?
Extracurricular involvement leads to self-esteem, leads to academic achievement.
It means that
you can influence your academic achievement by increasing your extracurricular involvement. And the mechanism through which it operates is that it increases your self-esteem that will then lead to other variables. So if we have studying, and that's your X, and Y is doing well in exam, let's say that the mediation is learning. So when you study, then you learn. Because you learn, then you do better in exam. Also,
this would be what we call a full mediation relationship. If you study, but you don't learn, then there is no effect on doing well in exam. So simply studying without learning doesn't help you much. So the learning is the mechanism that explains why studying increases your grade. And these mediation models allow us to study mechanisms. Again, this mediation model in the Venkates paper is, they say that these variables here, how the system characteristics and process characteristics influence intensity use e-government, that on turn influences e-government use, and that influences satisfaction. So this is a long chain of mediation. How you estimate this in a regression analysis framework is that you simply run two regression models in the end. So we have here X influences M, M influences Y, and then we also want to control for the fact that X could actually influence Y directly. So let's say that studying the night before the exam influences your performance in the exam. Then we somehow measure your learning, and we identify that the effect of studying the night before the exam increases learning. Learning increases your performance in the exam. But the direct effect of studying the night before the exam has a negative effect on your exam score. That's entirely plausible. Why would that be the case? So if you study the night before the exam, but you don't learn anything, that's basically what this beta Y1 here means. You do something that doesn't influence the mediator at all, and that influences the dependent variable. So why would studying the night before the exam and not learning anything actually be negative? You stay up late until, let's say, 3 a.m., and then you study until that, your exam is at 9 a.m. in the morning. You don't learn anything during the last night cross. Why you would be better off not studying at all? You're tired. So it's possible that studying the night before the exam here actually has a negative effect on exam scores unless you learn a lot, because you become tired. And it's better to do the exam when you're not tired. We call this full mediation if all the effects of studying go on exam go through learning, and partial mediation if an exams effect of studying also has a direct effect on exam score that doesn't depend on your learning, or if it goes through some other mediators. The way you do this in regression analysis is that we do three regression analyses. The first regression analysis is that we take the dependent variable and we regress it on the X variable, the independent variable. So that establishes that there is some kind of statistical association after the control variables that could be mediated. Then you check with another regression analysis, does the mediator depend on the explanatory variable? Again, you would have the control variables in that one. And then you run the final model where you have both the original explanatory variable and the mediator variable as independent variables in the regression analysis, and then you explain why. The mediation effect, the effect of X to Y through M, is then simply the product of these two regression coefficients from these two analyses. So you multiply that regression coefficient and that together, and that's your mediation effect. So these mediation effects are useful for studying mechanisms, and they are also fairly common in information systems research. So we typically have, sometimes we have just an independent variable and a dependent variable, but usually we have, if we study whether people use an information technology or information system, we have typically the intention to use as a mediating variable between whatever our key interest is and the actual system use. You can see the Barron and Kenny approach in practice in this paper in table number 3. So this is a lot of regression models, and it's about like a bit more than 10 models, and it's organized according to the dependent variable, which is perhaps slight suboptimal. We can find these regress y on x, regress m on x, regress y on m and x from this model table. So our mediation model is from transparency to trust, from trust to intention to use, and that was presented in the paper. So we first need to find out where's the regress of y on x, so our intention to use on transparency without trust being included in the model. So it's here, and that's intention to use e-government, no trust. Transparency, yeah, that's...
No transparency, so...
That's the... I'll fix that for the slides when I upload them.
Then we regress
trust on the other explanatory variables. So have this exact same model, or rather this one, this exact same model, but no trust, and it's here. So that's the same model without or simply trust as the dependent variable. So the same model, 2, here is the same as this one, but we just change the dependent variable
to be the trust, the moderator. And then we have the third model, which is regress y on m and x, which is here.
So we have trust here. So the difference between these, that model and that model, which is the right model number 1, is that we include the mediator variable in the model.
Then we calculate that the mediation effect is
the product of this coefficient of trust, intention to use on trust, times the coefficient of transparency on trust here. So 0.18 times 0.16, pretty small.
But that's how we do mediation. So we run 3 regression analyses. We regress first y on x to see if there's a relationship that could be mediated. Then we regress the mediator on the x, which tells that the x influenced the mediator. And then we regress the dependent variable on the x and the mediator. And this was discussed as an intervening variable in singleton and straits in multiple occasions. Okay, any questions about mediation and moderation? The final thing that I want to say today is a few words about the workflow for a data analysis project. Then on Monday, I will demonstrate you how in practice this works using a statistical software that I apply. So typically, we start the quantitative analysis project by forming hypothesis. So that's the first step. And the hypothesis is a statistical association that we test. So our idea was that we have a theory, and from that theory, we deduce that if theory is correct,
if information accuracy is actually related
to intention to use e-government, then if we measure
accuracy
somehow, we measure intention to use somehow, then those two variables should be associated after we control for any alternative explanations. Okay, so that's the hypothesis that comes from theory that we're testing. The next step is that we collect data, and typically, when we collect some data, the data is not in the right format. We may have to join different data sets. We typically then do exploratory data analysis. We have to understand what the data are. Are there any data entry mistakes? Somebody tells you that they are 300 years old. Someone tells you that they are minus 3 years old. That kind of thing. Then you screen the data for any mistakes, and you also screen the data for any observation that shouldn't be in there. Then we do measurement validation. So quite often we use what we call composite measures. So the idea of composite measure basically is that when we have multiple measures that are supposed to measure the same thing, then we just take a sum. And a composite is like a collection of things. So we collect multiple measures together and take a sum. When we do the measurement validation, our main tools are factor analysis. And the idea of a factor analysis was to identify patterns in the variables. So if we have 30 variables and we say that they are supposed to measure 10 different things, then we do a factor analysis. We ask the computer to give us 10 factors, and the computer allocates those variables to the factors, and then we check if those variables that are supposed to measure same thing go to the same factor. If yes, then we conclude that they could be, we have some empirical evidence that they're actually valid. Then we calculate quite often the sum, and then we do our Cronbach's alpha, and that gives us a reliability estimate. Then the next thing is descriptive statistics. So descriptive statistics comes before the regression analysis table, and descriptive statistics, we just calculate means and standard deviations and correlation of the data. And that goes to the paper. In the Venkates paper, the correlations are here in this table. And this is also useful for interpreting regression analysis results. That answers your question that you asked. I will post the answer to the course forum, but I just don't have the time here to do the calculations based on the correlations. So here we see they have two samples. They have government websites. They have online appointment services. They have mean, standard deviation. Then there is Cronbach's alpha here for the scale, composite reliability, which is basically the same thing. And then average variance extracted is another reliability index that you don't need to care about. So then we look at the correlations. We look at, do they make sense? So if we see that if we have companies, for example, we should expect that the company's revenues, how much money the company, how much sales it has, correlates with how much people it employs. That kind of thing. So we look, go through each correlation and we ask, are the correlations that are high, are they expected? Are there any unexpected low correlations? If we see that our correlation between companies' sales and companies' personnel is zero, then that's an indication that there's something weird going on in our data, because normally we would expect a very high positive correlation. Then we go to the main analysis, which is typically some kind of regression analysis. It's a basic regression, linear regression that we talked here, or some extension of that, at least 90% of the case in IS research. Then we do a table like that. So we do regression models, we collect the results as a table, and then we interpret the results. We do diagnostics for the analysis. So basically, I didn't cover that in detail. You have that as video. But we look at whether there's evidence of non-linearity in the relationships by looking at the residuals. We look at if any cases are very different from others by looking at if they have a high residual or not. Then we do possibly some supported analysis. For example, someone could challenge that our results don't really hold because we are analyzing only people who are mostly, let's say, university students. So these don't apply to full population. Maybe they don't apply to older people. We could have attack that kind of counter argument by taking like the oldest 10% of our sample and then repeating the analysis for that. So quite often you have to do this kind of supporting analysis by analyzing subsamples to demonstrate that your results hold even if your data were different. The key points from this lecture is that you have to understand the idea and the reason why you use regression analysis. So regression analysis is like correlation, except that it takes more than one explanatory variable. And it answers the question of how much an effect of one variable is if the cases are comparable on every other variable in the model. So if we have company size, company industry, and CEO gender as explanatory variables, then the coefficient of gender tells us what is the expected difference in profitability between man and woman at companies for companies that are in the same industry and that are the same size.
Then regression analysis so allows us to rule alternative explanations. And it's a linear model, so it basically draws a line through the data. And it makes certain assumptions that if you apply regression analysis, then you need to check them. I have video material for those who want to actually use these techniques. And you can, of course, ask questions later. Then we had the moderation and mediation. So moderation is about a third variable influencing the relationship between two other variables. These are important because they allow us to study under which conditions things occur. Then we had mediation, which are interesting because they allow us to study mechanisms. So, for example, studying influences your performance in exam, because by studying you learn, and when you learn, then you do better. So that would be a mechanism. Finally, the quality of your study is determined by these features: reliability, measurement validity. We discussed those last time. Then statistical conclusion validity. We discussed that a bit during the first lecture. Simply, have you identified the correlations correctly? Then internal validity refers to whether our correlations are actually causal. Regression analysis answers that question. It allows us to extract the causal part from a correlation under the assumption that we have controlled for every other relevant plausible alternative explanation by including them as control variables in the model. So regression analysis is as good as your set of controls. And that's something that that many researchers don't really understand. They think that because you apply regression to some data, you will have a causal effect. That is correct only if you have the right controls which come from your theory. So you have to think what would be the alternative reasons for gender and CEO gender and profitability, for example, to correlate besides there being a causal effect of gender. Then next lecture, I will take all this together. So I recommend that you prepare questions. If you have something that's on your mind that you want to learn before the exam, then next Monday is the last time you'll be with me. And I also work you through a data analysis example. So we'll start the class with a hypothesis, and then we'll see what it would take to study that hypothesis and what's the analysis workflow, what do the results actually look like, how do you do it? So that kind of things. And I recommend that you go through the material that we have covered this far, particularly the part about regression analysis in chapters 15 and 16 in Singleton and Straits, and then you can also check at the Venkates paper again, because we'll be taking that kind of like as a template. All right. Any questions? This one.
The same factors look the other way around don't produce the same number. Like, what is the reason behind that? For example, if you look at transparency, if you compare it to accuracy, if transparency to accuracy, then these are 8 and 9.
Yeah. Eight.
8 and 9. The other way around is 41. The other way around is 49.
Yeah, that's a good question. The reason is that this is two samples.
Yep.
So this government website, one sample, online booking service, another sample.
I see. Okay, so
this is for one sample correlations. This is for another sample.
I see. Okay.
Quite often when you see this kind of things, then the table footer provides you the information. So you see here that the correlations below the diagonal are for the government website samples, and correlations above the diagonal are for online appointments.